Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. It's so great to be here another week. I'm so thrilled to have our show. And I'm actually in Nevada this week, typically in Hawaii or Maryland, and I'm in the middle of this time. So today we've got a really exciting show. I hope you all are enjoying this time of year. It's pretty decent out there everywhere right now. If you want to call in, our number is 347-945-5428, 347-945-5428, or you can also email radio@realityuniversal.com, as well as going on the website realityuniversal.com. Today we are going to pretty much keep the show focused on, well, we always go around, as everybody knows who listens to our show, but we're going to keep it pretty much focused on commercial agents and brokers, or if you're thinking about getting into the business. Pretty much in the United States, but some of this can apply anywhere, because a lot of what we're going to talk about today is how you do it, the mindsets, how you handle things with people and take yourself from one place and set your goals and make it happen. So we have today, our guest is Dr. Jim Gillespie, and he is America's premier commercial real estate coach. He's actually the founder and creator of Coaching for Commercial Real Estate in the industry. He does one-on-one coaching and consulting for agents, brokers, managers, investors, developers, owners of commercial real estate brokerage companies. He actually started in the commercial business, so he knows it like the back of his hand. In addition, he hosts live teleseminars where he interviews top commercial brokers that can, you know, give you input on what's happening in the industry and the how-tos if you're involved in the investing side of it as well as selling. He hosts webinars, speaks live at important commercial real estate industry conferences. He has spoken at events sponsored by CCIM, SIOR, SOAR, NAR, Realtors Commercial Alliance, and other major commercial real estate industry companies and organizations. He's past president of AIR, Commercial Real Estate Association, one of the largest, actually largest and most influential commercial real estate brokerage association in California. He has written over 400 articles to help commercial real estate agents make more money. He publishes commercial real estate training videos. He's been published in or written about in the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, SIOR, SOAR Professional Report, Commercial Investment Real Estate Magazine, which is the magazine for CCIM, and First for Women magazine. He's actually, I could go on and on and on, but he's coached agents working with C.B. Richard Ellis, Cushman & Wakefield, Marcus & Millichamp, Newmark, Grubb, Knight, Frank, Colliers, Coldwell Banker Commercial, NAI, Sperry Van Ness, actually almost every major commercial real estate brokerage firm in our industry. He's been doing this a long, long time. And without further ado, I'd like to welcome Dr. Jim Gillespie. How are you doing?
Hey, Natalie. Good. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for coming back, too. We were on before, and this is going to be exciting. We've got such a volatile market and life and things going on these days, don't we? Between stocks and business and real estate and just life in general. So I'm really looking forward to touching on all of it with you today.
Yeah, great. I mean, there's some real interesting stuff going on in the stock market lately. Yeah.
Ah, Doesn't it seem like it's just, you know, how it's so manipulated? It's kind of like, okay.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah,
people,
there's so much going on behind the scenes that you know, I mean, just money being, you know, created and put into things to shore it up. But it's just hard to figure out, like, and project what's really going on when you know there's all this stuff going on from behind the scenes.
I know. And it's like the ones that have billions out there, like, you know, they get laws changed and do this and then turn around and buy when it's low. I'm going, okay, wait a minute. Or then I know if you have time to do option trading, you can make money. But it really is tough. It's just
I saw an Oklahoma congressman named Jim Bridenstine, a YouTube video that said on the average, the tax code is changed twice a day throughout the year from all of this lobbying to put more of the tax burden on the regular person on the street and give tax breaks to, you know, wealthy, powerful corporations and the elite and stuff like that, twice a day on the average, okay?
It's wrong. I won't name a name, but if I did, you would know, and everybody out there would know, and who literally knew, we know, for a fact, had laws changed on a very large industry, and now that industry is tanked somewhat, and the person is buying up all kinds of stock in that industry, right?
Mm.
So what do you want to make a bet that once all that happens,
yeah,
and some of it will switch back the other way, and you go, this is just – so I guess that, you know, what's sad to me is when you when people have all their life savings or many of their life savings in it, and they start panicking and selling because they say, you know, you really want to talk to your stockbroker or advisor and sit tight. It's sometimes a good time to buy. I mean, we're not giving any stock advice at all, but
yeah,
I think the panicking's and then when you see people that are just, you know, they're living on Social Security and retired, and it scares them, it's just frustrating to me. But
yep,
it is what it is, right? But we're in such
yeah,
a, with the internet too, we're bombarded with so much. And now you go to the store and whatever you get to pick from now, we used to have a few things to pick from, or you could really investigate a few items. Now we have so much, it's inundating, isn't it? It's kind of like
mm-hmm,
being an older person.
Yesterday I did a print screen, like, copy of something, and I'm not going to mention the website, but it's like a mega, mega major news website. And I was telling, you know, friends of mine, it's so hard to accurately understand what's going on in the housing market because there's such conflicting information. And finally yesterday, on the front page of this major well-known news website, there was one link to an article basically saying that housing is on fire and another article saying that, like, you know, negative housing reports are causing this. And I go, oh, my gosh, they're right next to their, you know, each other. I did a print screen and sent it to a friend of mine. And sure enough, within 5 or 10 minutes, both articles were down from the front of the website, you know.
They were?
Yeah.
Really?
It's like they were both removed and they were onto something else. I guess somebody caught it and just went, wait a second, we gotta get this off of here.
I'm like,
it's too strange.
God,
you know?
That's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it really, it's really amazing. It's just like, you know, so, yeah, it's really like, what's really happening out there, huh?
Oh,
and,
yeah. Depends on who you
really
talk to and their take and their spin. Yeah, you know.
I know. And so that balance, the peace we have to keep in life really has to come from just, you know, taking risks but not over-risking, and then making sure that it's comfortable for us and getting lots of good advice. And you,
yeah,
your story, your history is so interesting. Tell us how you got started in commercial real estate and then how you came to where you are now, where you've been teaching people for years.
Sure. I actually began working when I was in college for what was at the time Coldwell Banker Commercial, okay? You know, both of them were, you know, under the same corporation, residential, commercial. So I was working there in college, and then when I graduated, I began in commercial real estate working for another company. And Coldwell Banker Commercial eventually went on to be sold, and its name changed a couple of times. Now it's known as CB Richard Ellis, and there's now a Coldwell Banker Commercial that's out there that's basically a company that came back under the same old name, but it's a whole new organization that's been around for like the last 10 years or so. But so I did it in college. I got into it right out of college. So I got into sales and leasing of industrial real estate in the downtown L.A. area and surrounding communities. A lot of garment clothing manufacturers, electronics people that would, you know, bring electronics in from Japan and Korea and then, you know, sell them wholesale. So I was doing that for about 18 to 20 years between college and when I graduated. And my territory just started to become so difficult because, you know, when I began there, it was people that were born and raised in this country, and then people started immigrating from places with different ethics, basically, where they would even tell me, don't show me a building that's owned by somebody from my country. It needs to be an American owner because
really?
I won't do business with people from my own country. That pretty much told me what I needed to know, basically. You know, it's like when their own people say they don't want to do business with themselves, that's about as big a statement as I could get. So it just got to a point where after many years, everything was, you know, negotiate, renegotiate. I know we agreed to this, but I want a cheaper price now. And I just went, you know, I got to do something different here. I either got to find a different territory or do something different. And this was the mid to late 1990s, and there was this budding industry called coaching at the time. And I thought, wait a second, I could do this for commercial real estate agents because I'm an expert,
right,
and it would be fun, and I'd be helping people, and I could have great passion for it. And I could basically live anywhere because, you know, I'd be doing it on the phone and the internet. So that's how that got started. I actually founded Commercial Real Estate Coaching, and that's pretty much what I've been doing ever since. But along the way, I've had, you know, fascination with things like hypnotherapy and NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So I've gotten advanced credentials in that and a doctorate degree in clinical hypnotherapy. Worked with some of the world's top athletes, including Olympic gold medalists, to help them perform better in their sport. And it's very helpful for me in my coaching because I can understand with these tools the roadblocks that people are bumping up against, the walls, and be able to bring out alternatives to move them around the wall instead of just having them bump up their heads against it, so they end up being happier and more successful.
That's wonderful. Do you think most of that bump up against the wall really is attitude and blocks? Is that what does it?
Well, it really depends on the individual and the situation, because sometimes, you know, you could be bumping up against the wall because you've had a bad streak of things going on, or the market changes, or, you know, you just are doing what's not working anymore, and that may be a changing conditions, because you look at how much is changing in our society nowadays, where businesses that were great businesses to get into years ago, it's like you can't even do it now. I mean, the biggest industry that comes to mind with this, Natalie, is the photo industry, okay? When I was a kid, you know, in the 1960s and early 1970s, Sunday nights I'd sit with my dad and watch Disney's Wonderful World of Color, okay? Walt Disney, and, you know, do an hour-long presentation with different stories and this and that.
Oh, wow.
Sponsored by Kodak Film, okay? So Kodak had this amazing image at the time, you know, preserving the memories of our lives and stuff like that. Well, then look what happened, okay? Kodak came along, introduced digital imaging, okay? So at the same time, just before that, everybody was talking about, oh, you know, the greatest franchise you could own or the greatest business is get into these one-hour photo development places in the 1980s. Okay, so it was like, this is the future. Well, digital imaging made that no longer necessary. So Kodak invented that. Now, all of a sudden, people didn't need Kodak film, all right? So Kodak, you know, an intelligent company, says, well, what are we going to move into? They started to move into digital cameras, okay? Well, now with the sophistication of our mobile devices, who needs digital cameras anymore, okay?
You're right.
Now I heard about this service, and it just blew my doors off when I learned the economics of this. A service called, if I remember correctly, groovebook.com, G-R-O-O-V as in Victor, E-book.com, and they're basically saying, for $2.99 a month, it's an app, you can send them 100 photos from your mobile device, and they will send them to you in a printed format in a bound book for $2.99. Okay?
No way! Oh my god!
And I'm thinking back in the 60s when you would buy Kodak film, it was 12, 24, 36 exposures.
Wow.
And I mean, I even think like the 12 exposures was probably like $5 or more even back then. And now you get this, and I'm going, like, I remember the days at Disneyland when you'd be sitting there going, okay, we got like 3 exposures left on the roll, so we want one in front of, like, with Mickey, we want one in front of the whale, and we want one in front of It's a Small World, and that will, you know, move through the 12 and we'll be done. And now it's like, who even thinks about, I don't have enough photos left to take? But you look at Kodak and that whole change, and that's a company that, you know, has been battling with bankruptcy over the years. But, you know, they, they shifted once, they shifted again, and then everything still changed. And it's like, wow, I mean, that's the society that we're living in now.
That's so true. That is so true.
It's just, and you have to look at, you know, whatever you're doing right now, you got to try to project it out into the future and say, you know, where do I see my business and my industry transitioning to in terms of technology or what the people are going to want? And sometimes you can get a good idea, and sometimes you just won't see something big that's going to be developed or shifting over the next 3 to 5 years that's not even on the radar screen right now.
Right, because it's so, and they know, you know, years ago I saw the real estate menu systems, and now it's all over. It's like, oh my God, it was like I saw this 20 years ago and started it. You look at it and go, wow, we could have just cleaned house had I'd just gone in and taken it as, you know, further. But
Let me ask you a question about that, because I don't know if you know of this type of service, but I read about this several years ago, and I thought, oh my gosh, if this came to commercial, the agents would be going nuts. But I read about this concierge service on the residential side, where the company basically, you know, signs a deal with the homeowner, and the homeowner is interested in listing their home, and this company then goes out and picks and chooses the brokerage companies that they're going to interview to possibly list the home, and gets them
right to,
you know, compete with each other on what the rate's going to be. And then they go back to the owner and they say, well, you know, these are the people that we've interviewed and we recommend these people. So basically they're taking this as a business, you know, as
yeah.
a go-between in the situation. And I, at the time when I read about this 2 or 3 years ago, they were already like in 5 cities or something like that. And I just went, you know, wow, if that comes to commercial, there's going to be steam coming out of people's ears. But I would see with what you've talked about with that menu type service that
yeah.
somebody could probably do that in commercial in their own way. It would ruffle a lot of feathers, I can tell you, but I think there's probably opportunity
I think there's a lot of it. Because I'll tell you, there's a lot of it. I think there's a lot of it out there. But what's happening is technology is becoming so fast that people have the knowledge and people like to have choices. So I think they can do it. But you know, it's kind of like you know, Home Depot says we're going to help you if you need it, but we're also going to give you all these discounts, you know, give you perks. But it's just, I don't know. I think it's just inundating right now for people. I really can
yeah.
see people wanting to go have this menu, but have it a little bit simplified. I do believe, though, when you look at commercial versus residential, they're like two animals. You can still, I do some commercial, but not the
mm-hmm.
amount of commercial that I do on residential.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you really do need to have the attorneys involved more on the commercial than you do on the residential.
Sure.
Well, in the residential, you know, we have a lot of board contracts already prepared by the real estate attorneys for the boards. Commercial, I'm amazed to see so much commercial still being in-house, like not in the MLS, where you'll, you know, LoopNet, I think, is a big one for
yeah.
commercial
yeah.
listings. Why is LoopNet so big for commercial listings but still not the local MLSs?
Well, one thing is LoopNet came about as a pure commercial listing opportunity, a listing platform, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what normally happens is, and commercial agents, the term broker and agent is used interchangeably in the industry, whether
right.
you have a broker's license or a salesperson's license. So I may use the term interchangeably myself here. But they are very adamant about being separate from the residential side of the business. There's an attitude of we're superior, we're not those
oh,
residential
that's horrible.
People, so we don't
yeah.
ever want to be confused with them. I joke because I tell them, look, you need to be mailing to your people, postcards, newsletters. You need to put your photo on the mailers so they feel like they're building a relationship with a person who they can visually see. And I get this attitude of, Jim, that's what those residential agents do. And I go, yeah, but they take listings, too.
Feely,
should we
Jim.
Not
that's
take listings,
touchy.
You know?
That's too touchy-feely, Jim. It's not. It's like
yeah,
not
it's,
Monday
it's
through
great.
Friday in the suit and being like, okay, I'm
yeah.
real prim and proper, right?
They got this thing going on in their minds that that people are going to perceive me as being residential. I go, no, that's just in the commercial broker's minds, the people that you're mailing to. They're not thinking that you're looking like a residential person.
No.
Okay.
But you know, I had somebody who's an agent that's been with us in Hawaii needing a, you know, for a church organization needing to lease space, And, you know, we don't get into all of that. So I was telling her how to go about it on her own and that she'd almost have to call different commercial brokerages to get the info besides LoopNet because it's just not as easy, you know, to get it. So you, let me say, you're,
Let me just finish the thought about why they don't put it in the MLS. So there's this feeling of if they want to put it in a service, they don't want it to be anything affiliated with residential single-family homes, okay? So if there is no standalone commercial MLS in the area, they can be more resistant about putting it in an MLS that has single-family homes in there too. So that's one reason why you don't see it as much on the local level.
Okay. Really?
Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. That makes total sense.
But again, you know, it's that separation in their mind. Yeah.
We did have, you know how we have the flat fee and the MLS and then all the way up to full service, but we did have a commercial brokerage that I know, I've known them for a while, and they recommended another one to us to put the property in the MLS because they were having trouble selling it commercially. But that is far and few between. That, like, hardly ever happens, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing to me, but it's kind of silly because we're all supposed to work together, you know, and I don't know, but I just kind of, and I do commercial too, so it's like I have done it over the years, again, not as much as residential, but it's, but you know, it's just interesting to me because, but it's funny, you have to really be careful. Now, you know, can you give your contact information because what you're doing, a lot of, you know, commercial brokers, people.
Sure, okay. My website is commercialrealestatecoach.com. You know, as you mentioned earlier on, my specialty is coaching and training commercial real estate agents, as well as, you know, doing that kind of work with managers and work sometimes with investors and developers, usually in the context of when they're also involved in brokerage or owning or managing an office. But if you go to the website, there's an opt-in box that pops up if you're interested in subscribing to my e-newsletter. But what's really cool about that is the special bonus that I offer is an amazing interview with a top commercial broker who just does an amazing job of talking about how to organize your commercial real estate business from the top down. I mean, this is a guy who, when he goes to appointments that take him a while to get to, he has a driver drive him so that he can do work in the back seat of the car, basically. Somebody who's been a coaching client of mine. And, you know, within 5 years in the business, he got to the point of selling more apartment buildings in the state of Texas than any other agent because he was open to learning how to market himself, had done it with a business that he'd owned before, and we worked together to do this, and he's just done a phenomenal job. So that's like a free audio interview that you can get if you sign up for my e-newsletter, and it's a tremendous interview. It's just, you know, the people that I know who have listened to it just said it's mind-blowing how great this guy is and what he teaches other agents how to do with their own business.
Wow. And he's doing, you know, the commercial, would you say you have to do it more physically? It's not as easy to do virtually as the residential is?
It can be less physically the more that it's investment-related because you don't have to take people through the building like a home because they're thinking of moving their business in there. So if they're buying apartment buildings or buying something investment-oriented that's more based upon the numbers, there's less physical time of going to the building, and that's maybe done more by inspectors and things like that. But you ought to go anyway just for your due diligence to see if there's any problems that jump out at you. But generally, it's less you know, walking into the building intensive when it's an investment versus somebody's trying to visually see if they can move their business in there.
You still need people on the ground. I know, and I know you don't want to talk about, like, the ends of the, you know, like the legality parts of it or whatever, and of course we're not attorneys, but I've gotten getting involved in some commercial. I mean, I always want to make sure that, you know, the EPA regulations are taken care of, and if there's been gas tanks, you know, that's another big issue. There's gas in the ground and the liabilities and other environmental issues, or could be towers for just so many things, and zoning. And so I've gotten into it, and I do these longer feasibility studies and then make sure, of course, the attorneys are the ones writing the contracts. We can write a contract, but subject to an attorney doing what they do.
Let me mention something around this. Because, like I said, my specialty was industrial for almost 20 years. And so with industrial, it's not only can you agree on price, okay? There's so many different factors for what you're planning on putting in the building. Is the sprinkler density adequate enough for the local fire department, okay? Do you have enough office space for the offices that you want? Do you have the proper loading that you want? Is it ground level where you could drive the truck into the building, or is it dock high where the level that the truck backs up to is now at the floor level of the building? Okay.
Super important.
Does it have a proper amount of electricity? Okay. Are there any environmental or hazardous substances or contaminants in the property that could come back later on where an environmental agency says this all has to be cleaned out at a cost of hundreds of thousands of dollars? There's so many different factors. And the crazy thing is, you could have a situation where you look at the type of business the company's going to be doing, and you look at what's written in the local zoning book for the city about whether that's acceptable or not, and it says that it is. And what you don't know is the city has decided that they no longer want to have that kind of use in that area anymore, but they haven't updated the zoning book.
Oh,
so if you sell the property to the person or lease it to them, they could go down and try to get a business permit to occupy, and they say, I'm sorry, we no longer are interested in those kind of uses there. So you really have to have your people go down to City Hall and talk to the people and specifically talk about this property, and this is what we're planning on doing. Is this still something that would be looked favorably upon by the city, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, there's so many different details where you could get sued if you don't know what's going on, and they can change within one city to the different one next door, okay?
So it's amazing. I mean, as being a real estate agent broker in the industry, whichever hat you wear, we really are kind of facilitators. We have to get out of, you know, for the agents and brokers listening, we have to get out of saying, okay, I'm told this specifically, even if we get all the information from the county and the zoning, we still have to put the onus on the buyer to be double-checking,
to
be going there. I've had times over the years, I've been in 30 years, where I had clerks give wrong information, and if we didn't, you know, do it that way, we would have been sued. There was a time once when somebody actually lied to us in one of the zoning offices because they didn't want to see the building being done. I mean, you know, all kinds of things happen, but the due diligence, we can kind of give them the information, but they need to sign off that they've checked it, their attorneys have checked it, they've gone through and done the due diligence. Otherwise, guess what? You're the first one that's going to be sued when they find out they can't do exactly what you're talking about, Jim. It's definitely detail, detail, detail. And the EPA and the commercial side of it, because, you know, with commercials, many times you have where there were underground oil tanks, underground gas tanks, right? Lots of things.
Absolutely.
And that, I think, from what I've heard over the years, can be passed on to the new owner, right? The liability.
Absolutely.
So not only that, the
regulations can change where a certain amount of parts per million in the soil after removing the tanks is acceptable, but then 10 years later they decide that they need an even more stringent requirement, so what was okay 10 years ago might not be acceptable now, okay?
Oh, wow. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other thing, because we've got local requirements, we've got city, county, ordinance, then you have federal. And so if somebody's getting a loan, I've noticed when somebody's getting a loan, which many do get the loans because they're not going to use all their own money on this.
Sure.
A lot of the mortgage companies or the commercial, lenders are going to ask for these feasibility studies and the environmental study and the other study. They're not cheap either. You know, they're very expensive.
Yeah.
But they're worth it. They're worth it to get. But I think even those studies have to be gone through because I've had situations depending on, you know, in Hawaii things are a little more lax. And, well, that last study we didn't really do anything with it. They didn't update it. Everybody was okay. Well, why were they okay? Because this part of that environmental study wasn't done. You can see in the report that they skipped things, right? So those are things that are very important. So I want to go through something because then I want to jump around. Do you believe we're almost half over? And I've got some questions for you, Dr.
Okay.
Gillespie. It's going by. I don't think we're going to do commercials today.
You and I can both talk so fast, I think people's minds are just going, hold on. Slow down, you know,
But that's a good thing about recording these and people listening to the downloads, because they can go back and listen and say, I was looking up, this is 6 trends in commercial real estate to watch for in 2015 from Urban Land, the magazine of Urban Land Institute, okay? Okay. It said this article was written by, to give credit, Peter Burley and David Lynn, two of the contributors to ULI's new book, The Investor's Guide to Commercial Real Estate. It says, now, trends, okay, where do we have this on here? I'm looking through this. It says increased allocations and capital flows, with most institutions, not to mention high net worth investors, still being under-allocated to real estate, combined with the strong 4- and 5-year performance of both NCREIF and NAREIT. we can expect more investment capital coming into commercial real estate. Yay. The significant amount of capital would be vexing if not for the fact that real estate seems to offer some of the best risk-reward propositions around, particularly given the multi-year run-up in equity and bond values. Look for higher allocation targets and more foreign and retail investor money to continue to push capital values up well beyond the 2007 peaks, which should be cause for concern. Now, we are not giving, again, legal advice, stock advice, or anything. Please check with your advisors and attorney and your, but your, you know, your people, because we're just quoting what we're reading from this article. But it's interesting to me. It says there's continued low supply, increased appetite for risk. Investors continue to follow the jobs and people. Markets such as San Francisco, Austin, Seattle, and others have demonstrated advantageous population and job growth dynamics. So TEP, I guess, and it says many of the jobs that are created in those cities are tied to technology as well as to energy and banking. It says that in other metropolitan areas, including D.C., with still substantial government employment base and growing financial services and technology sectors, in Houston, with its enormous energy sector and export machine, promise to be the near of top of any list for investment, not just the sector. I want to mention D.C., through all the markets, and even 2008, D.C. held its own as far as the last 15 years. For a long time, and there's a lot of reasons for that, but it's really interesting. So the investors are continuing to follow that. It says multifamily is still very popular, also ongoing retail bifurcation. What is that, retail bifurcation?
I don't know. That's one of those words that I've heard over the years, and it's sort of like, you know, it sounds impressive when you say it, but...
Wow. Well, let's see what they say. They say, because I'm going, what? This is like, and I've been in a long time. I've heard a confluence of factors, including especially the economic recession and the inexorable wave of e-commerce, has redefined the retail market equation. Okay, so maybe
more people
are buying online, so it's hurting the retail market. So bifurcation, I guess they're saying that part of it's going to be gone. A day of the suburban mall, anchored by a mid-market department store, has probably passed. There will be no return.
I just went on Google. Bifurcation, the division of something into two branches or parts. Okay.
Okay. So when we talk about the internet and you still want to buy,
let's jump in with what you just said about the changes in the retail market. Okay. So what's happening is people are gradually buying more and more online with their purchases. Okay. So what that means is they don't have the need to go down to the retail store to buy these things. So the way that that's changing commercial real estate is you now have an entire market now with warehouses that are set up for e-commerce, for Amazon or Staples or whatever, to make that shipping really easy and streamlined from the moment the order comes in, where it's now going from the warehouse directly to the consumer instead of them picking it up at the retail store and walking home with it. So now you're getting these industrial buildings that are massive, massive warehouse buildings of hundreds of thousands of square feet with really high ceilings on the inside so they can stack way up to the, as high as they can to get more cubic footage out of the use of the building. And then their own specific like rack and automated systems and things like that for storing the merchandise, knowing where it is, getting it electronically with different robot devices into certain situations and stuff like that. So it's really, retail is becoming less desirable and necessary, but it's changing the whole landscape of industrial to accommodate this online purchase and shipping directly to the consumer from the warehouse market.
Wow, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
so that's
and like,
why
for example,
that – Go ahead.
So, like for example, with apartment houses, okay. So, I live in Southern California. I live in an area called the Temecula Valley, which is about an hour north of San Diego. But I grew up in Los Angeles, and moved out here like 13 years ago. But in L.A., for example, I was just reading an article about the west side of L.A., which is a nice part of Los Angeles, that in the better areas, that some of these apartment buildings are selling at 3% cap rates, okay. And you sit there and go, okay, like if somebody's buying at a 3% cap rate right now,
what do they think the
upside is going to be? Do they think that eventually they'll be able to sell at a 2% cap rate? You go, it may not be the time unless you're just content with collecting rent and having the rent go up over time And hopefully the market's hot and you can sell eventually at a 3% cap rate again. So you got to ask yourself, do I think I'll be able to sell at a higher cap rate eventually or a lower cap rate eventually? And it's just kind of risky unless you're just saying,
I'll hold it for
10 or 20 years and I'll figure it out, you know?
Right, but if they buy it really, really cheap, could it be okay? It'll come, some of it'll maybe for other uses or like maybe storage facilities. I don't know. There's got to be, and like you said, warehouses. I think there's got to be a call for it somewhere. But oh wow,
I was thinking of apartment buildings in the west side of Los Angeles. They're going to stay apartment buildings, basically, you know, because they're not going to be zoned for the other stuff. But it's the highest and best use will be that. But it's just you got to go. Where's the upside? You ideally want to buy it at a time when the market's not as hot and you can get it at a higher cap rate and think, okay, when the market catches on fire again, then I can hopefully sell it at a lower cap rate. But 3% cap rate, how much lower do you think they could go to get out of it in the future?
Oh, my goodness. That's horrible. Well,
you talked about the foreign investment stuff, okay? When we were in the dumper with the economy, everybody, you know, the American investors are going, oh, my gosh, it's risky. I don't know if I want to buy anything. But foreign investors were going, my gosh, even though the American economy is in the dumper, it looks so much more solid than the country I live in. So we want to put our money in the United States because we feel there's more upside, whereas all the people here, we're sitting on the sidelines, and we've got so much more foreign ownership of real estate now here in the United States. And it's still coming over even in these good times.
Oh my goodness! Because that makes sense.
There was a woman that I know who recognized this opportunity in the dumper, and she started going to Canada to give seminars for Canadian investors to tell them, look, this is a great time to buy properties here in the United States at depressed prices. And she was making so much money by bringing this Canadian money down here.
Wow.
Well, all of her old clients were going, well, we're kind of scared. We don't know about the economy. And these Canadian people were going, sell us more, sell us more. It's better than Canada right now.
Wow, smart. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it also says the industrial, like you just said, continues its steady improvement. I see a lot of little small and posh shops are going by the wayside. You know, you still have, like you said, when you go into a strip centers, you're seeing the grocery stores, you're seeing Home Depot, Walmart, Office Depot, who bought out Office Max. I mean, it's just a whole different model than what we used to see. Macy's in Kailua, Hawaii, they on Oahu, they own the buildings, and they're shutting down that Macy's store, and they're using it for other use now, other commercial use. So
it's just good.
Well, you know, it's kind of it's mind-boggling because I love the Internet, and I'm used to trying to work virtually as much as possible. I spent a lot of years to be able to do it that way, but now it's just going, wow, which it's very definitely.
When you look at businesses for the future, because, like, we're in a time where, you know, it's not going to be uncommon to be in one business for a while and then segue into another one where you see more opportunity because the old one is changing so fast, the paradigm for it. But you got to think about a couple of things, okay? You got to think, you know, could I be replaced by automation, or could this business be replaced by automation, basically? Or do I see that, like, big players like we talked about, like Walmart, Staples, whoever, you know, all of a sudden getting everything to a point to where as a mom and pop, I couldn't compete on price with them anymore. And one thing that I realized is like a business like hairstyling, okay, or a nail salon, okay, extremely unlikely that you could be replaced by machinery in the future, okay?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't think people are going to go in and put their head under something and go, okay, well, I'm going to push a button and it's going to give me this hairstyle. There's something very important about the client relationship with the hairstylist and how they trust them over time and what they can do and change it in the moment if it doesn't look good in the mirror. So, you know, even though that may not be the most lucrative of professions, it's something that I think would be very unlikely to be replaced by automation. So think in terms of what are businesses like that in the future where I'm less likely to be replaced, because I tell people, if you're working for corporate America today, you got to realize that one of their most important goals is to find the way to eliminate your job.
You know, you're so right. But I tell you, like when I look back, I don't like to do it with the real estate menu systems. I tell you, I see with technology, though, more and more, so much is going on with the Internet that people really still love to do business with people they know, people they can trust, you know, people that give them the referrals because they know, hey, that's solid, that's safe. There's so much on the Internet where someone could put something up and look like they're professional when they're not professional. You know, they could just be, you know, it's just it's just a very different world out there. So
yeah.
I think like
and,
what
and,
you're
and,
doing,
and with,
we, you know, yeah.
With that, with that in mind,
go ahead.
With that in mind, okay,
me,
sorry, well, you and I both have like so
I'm
much.
I'm supposed
to
be talking and interviewing you, so I need to learn to stop doing this.
But with that in mind, okay, you talk about how you love the internet and people want to, you know, trust people they do business with. Like on Amazon, for example, people have their own Amazon stores set up with their own brand name and their products
right.
that they sell, you know, to build trust with the Amazon consumer going, okay,
right.
I bought this perfume from this person or this essential oil or these other things, and I liked it, so I feel comfortable going back to this person's store and seeing what else they have that I want to buy. So they're doing their own branding and credibility within the Amazon umbrella.
I agree. And, you know, I still think people like the touchy-feely. They still like the
mm-hmm.
heart and soul. They still like to feel like people, and they still love the good calls, the good connection, because we're getting away from so much of that, you know? And the younger generation is almost like, you know, you're walking down the street and nobody says hi because they've got their earplugs in and their phone, and, you know, everybody's like, you know, just like, no, really, it's kind of antisocial,
uh-huh.
like, hey, hi,
yeah.
hi, oh, they've got their plugs in, that's why they're not talking to me, you know?
I saw a cute thing somebody posted on Facebook, okay? It was like somebody's house on the corner, and all these, like, bicycles, like Stingray bicycles, like about 8 to 10 of them laying down on the lawn, and the caption was, this is how we used to know where all of our friends were.
Ah, I love it. I love it. Oh, it's just amazing. It's just
yeah.
amazing to me. I want to dig in because, believe it or not, we only have 20 minutes left. I want to dig into some – I want to just ask you some questions about, you know, because you do such wonderful training. You're really in it, and you've been in it for a long time. I remember meeting you first through Tom Antion back in the 90s.
Sure. Great guy.
Can you
yeah.
believe it's that – can you believe it's that long already?
That's pretty amazing.
That's pretty scary to me. But
yeah.
I'm trying to look at the last 15 years going – flew by. And then I was thinking the 15 before didn't seem to go by so fast, but it was because I was younger, I guess. I don't know. It's
yeah.
like, it's pretty scary to me.
I remember
really
my mom
scary.
Used to tell me when I was a kid, the years go by faster when you're older. I'm going, what are you talking about? A year is a year. Now I get it, you know?
They really do. This is Natalie Mullenix with Realty Universal Radio. We have Dr. Jim Gillespie, America's premier commercial real estate coach, on the line with us and calling in on the show. We're going to dig in and just a couple things because it's really worth it. You should go to Jim's site, and that's Premier Real Estate. What is it? Coach again.
CommercialRealEstateCoach.com.
Okay, CommercialRealEstateCoach.com. Okay, I'm just going to dig in and ask you a couple questions because, you know, I've been in
okay.
it. So if you're okay, people that are already they're in the business or maybe they're new in the commercial business, and how do you handle an owner that says, you know, I want to sell or lease by myself, and it's commercial, not residential, total
yeah.
commercial
okay.
here.
All right.
Okay.
So basically, you know, what you're dealing with, generally speaking, is an owner who's thinking, hold on, I want to save a commission and put that money in my pocket. So if I can sell by myself, I'm going to end up with more money net in my pocket. So I don't want you as the agent or broker in the transaction. So what you ideally need to do is reframe that position and that feeling that the owner has from one of they're going to be saving money and putting more money in their pocket if they work without a broker, to it's going to cost them more money to do it that way. And you could say something similar to, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Owner, I know you're thinking that you're going to save a commission and put more money in your own pocket because of it, but here's the situation. When you have a property that's you know trying to be sold from an owner, all of a sudden the most savvy investors in the market want to swoop in and buy this property at a big discount, and they dream of off-the-market transactions because they know they're not going to have all of this competition from all of the buyers because they don't know about the property. So they're going to sweep in, make a deal at a price you may think is okay, but they'll be so thrilled that they got it at what they consider to be below market. Yeah, you will have saved the commission, but you will have missed out on all of these other offers from people. If you had listed your property with me, allowed me to get the word out to everybody in the market, we create this bidding frenzy with buyers you never would have found before, and then we end up getting you a price that you'll be thrilled with that will not only pay the commission but give you more money in your pocket above and beyond that. Would you rather do that, or would you rather let a savvy investor swoop in, take advantage of you, and buy the property at a lower price?
Right, you have the knowledge, you have the education, you know what to look for, how to, you know, to overdo
yeah.
it. Good point, very good point, very good point.
And
I
tell people in that situation,
time, yeah.
you can use a metaphor and say, if you were going to sell your own car, Mr. and Mrs. Owner, Would you just put flyers in the mailboxes of the 10 houses on either side of you and go that way, or would you want to get the word out to any possible buyer in your geographical area? Which one do you think will give you the higher price? You know, and clearly they're going to understand that it's getting the word out to everybody, and you use that as a metaphor with the other situation of them trying to sell their property by themselves.
And what if they say to you, well, you know what, with the commercial, I know I have an attorney who's a commercial attorney. He's going to have to draw the contracts anyway. And I've heard that most of my friends, of course, always have the attorneys draw the contract, even if they have an agent. And, you know, I've already been putting it out there. And so can they put it on LoopNet, or do you have to be an agent to put it on LoopNet?
You know, you're talking about the owner or the attorney or both?
No, can an owner put a property on LoopNet, or do you have to be licensed?
You know something? I'm pretty sure they can, and it's just, you know, if I was an agent listing properties and putting them on the market, I would know the answer to that question, but since
I don't know, because we registered under LoopNet before, of course, as a brokerage, so I'm not sure if that's...
I believe but I'm not 100% certain.
That's a really good point, though. It's a good point because it's such a – I mean, there's just so many things that they can open a can of worms up if they try to do it themselves, I think, too. It really – because there's so many issues to go over. What are the two major arenas for commercial brokerage real estate success, would you say?
Yeah.
The major
ones? And this is just like in its simplest form, because the business can get and feel really complicated. But basically – you know, once you have good market knowledge and ideally, you know, can talk to people intelligently, becoming hugely successful in commercial real estate brokerage generally comes down to, again, in its simplest form, number one, identifying the prospects that you want to begin working with, you know, people that are going to want to buy, sell, or lease property. And then number two, getting these people to work with you exclusively, okay, because once you've got the exclusive agreement – with a listing, as long as it's reasonably priced, you know, that means you got a chance to make some real serious money, or you could also work the buyer lessee side of the business with an exclusive agreement too. So generally, getting people to sign exclusive agreements with you is such a crucial part of being able to move forward and make some money.
Okay. That's very, very important.
And again,
important.
That's in its simplest form, basically. So you got to find the prospects that you want to work with and get them to work with you exclusively.
That's fantastic. Okay, how do you brand yourself as an expert and get more listings? So how to stand out in their mind? The branding, I mean, we have Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and in the residential world, that's part of it. But is that still a part of it in the commercial world too?
Well, you know, on social media, generally speaking, your principals that you want to do business with are not going to be spending a lot of time on social media for their business. They may be on Facebook with their friends and people they went to high school with and stuff,
right,
but they're not necessarily going to be networking on social media to find their next commercial real estate agent.
No.
I think that will become more common when the people in their 20s and 30s right now start getting into their 40s and 50s, where it's just ingrained in them so deeply, okay? But not really right now, okay? So ideally, the way that you want to brand yourself is by doing great mailing to your people, you know, the owners that you want to do business with, you know, telling them the trends that are going on in the marketplace, you know, telling them the things that they need to watch out for in their next commercial real estate transaction, you know, giving them studies and reports on what's going on in the market right now. So they're going, wow, this agent really is making me think about things that are important to me. And boy, I tell you, we should probably be working with that person the next time we do a transaction. You can't do that by prospecting calls alone, where they go, you know, call us back in 6 months, and that's basically it until you call them in 6 months. You can't brand yourself, especially because all your competitors will be prospecting them also in that six-month period.
Exactly.
So they're not really going to remember you when it's time to call them in 6 months. But through the mail, they'll get this stuff, they'll stick it in the property file, and they'll open the property file and go, this is the agent who sends us this stuff, and here's their phone number. We ought to pick up the phone and call them right now. It happens so often with my people that I coach on how to send out outstanding mailers. You can't believe how often this happens with them.
You do agree it should be print ads, not email, definitely mailers, actual print.
Yeah, print ads. It shows that you're a substantial person willing to spend money They'll get it. They'll stick it on their desk till they have time to look at it. And anybody could email, and it's so hard to get people's attention in email nowadays.
You know, I had to go to Office Depot. I'm in Nevada right now, and Office Depot was bought out by OfficeMax, so it's going through a major change. I mean, it took me 2 hours Saturday night to get something done that should have been 15 minutes, and then last night a few more minutes. And they're like, "Why are you doing this? Don't you have somebody to go and do it for you?" I said, "Well, everybody works virtually, so it's very different in the old days when I would just hand it over, right?" You know, to somebody, right? Well, I said, "Oh, my God." They said, "What size letters?" I said, "Well, you know, the legal size letters, but the letterhead is envelope. It's just one standard. We used to just pick one standard." "Oh, no, now we have three different ones here, and we have all these other selections." I'm like, "Oh, my gosh, what is happening to our world," right? I mean, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was for the business side. It was different than if you were doing thank you notes or anything. So it reminded me. It reminded me of, and they said, "Well, do you want the kind that they lick, the sticky kind, or the kind they peel off?" And I'm like, "The lick kind is fine." And I said, "Oh my gosh, I remember somebody working with me back in the late '80s, and I had her mail out 10,000 pieces of mail herself." You know, because now everybody, you order it and the companies do it for you, right? And I'll never forget, it took over a week. And she was really dedicated. She worked with me for a couple of years. She was great. I mean, she was phenomenal. She ended up having to move out of state. But can you imagine, it just brought it back to me, like what we used to do years ago, you know, now that you can just pay and get it done. But I didn't mean to digress that way, but
no.
I wanted to just point out that print is so much more important than just emails,
thinking, was she licking 10,000 envelopes, you know?
I swear to God. Well, we did have some spongy things, but I didn't do any. I was such a delegator still at that time, too. And I didn't know she had the spongy thing. Can you imagine, Ted? I think her back was hurt. She was really, really dead. It took over a week. But I know, ridiculous, huh? But that's what we did in those days. You didn't even think twice. You know, it's just you did it, right? Somebody did it. So, yeah, you know, everyone listening today, you guys are so lucky. You're so blessed in the things you don't have to do anymore that now we, you know, don't realize it because it gets, you know, we're still inundated, right?
Yeah.
So, amazing, amazing. So we are about 8 minutes left. I want to we know repetition is the mother of sales and you have to prospect and do things. What do you recommend what do you recommend them to do for referrals to stay fresh on clients' minds? You know,
well,
after
one of the things is with getting referrals, you got to be proactive with them. And one of the best times to ask for referrals is right when you're, you know, closing the transaction and you can take your people out to a celebratory lunch or dinner or something like that. And then 2/3 of the way through it, you're talking to the person, you go, "You know something, Bob, I really loved working with you on this transaction. And I'd really love to work with more people who are just like you. So my question to you is, who do you know that may be looking to buy, sell, or lease?" And so, you know, you're picking up the tab for the meal. You've complimented Bob by saying how much you love working with him. And now you're basically saying, who do you know that may be looking to buy, sell, or lease? Good chance he'll give you one or more names. You can now call the person, and it could be a person named Jeff. Well, now this is much better than doing a cold prospecting call because you come with Bob's referral. So you call Jeff up. You go, "Jeff, listen, I was out to dinner with Bob the other night. And, you know, Bob and I just closed this transaction on this building that he's moving into. You know Bob? Bob and I have been doing business for 15 years together." Well, now you come with the credibility of Bob when you're talking to Jeff. And so now you can continue to do that with Jeff the next time you call him. "Hey, Jeff, have you talked to Bob lately?" You sort of like get in much closer than you could ever do with a cold call just by mentioning the other name, okay? And you can keep mentioning that for years to come, basically, and they will take your call more frequently. You will rise up in their mind as somebody more that they should be working with because Bob worked with you and Bob said the call. Tremendous way to get in with people when you're referred that you can't do with an outside regular cold call.
That's a great point. Great point. So, and they shouldn't be shy and ask. Just ask, right? Is there anybody you can refer me to?
And you could do it with anyone you've done business with. You know, take them out to lunch, socialize with them periodically. You don't have to have just closed a transaction, but you could do the same format over a meal 2 to 3 years after you close the transaction. And again, you know, they will be willing to tell you somebody. Okay.
I love it. I love it. Great, great, great. Hey, I've got a. Let's see what we want to do here. Let's see. Is there a sure-tell sign when a seller who owns a property is just kind of using you to get your presentation and your ideas on how to sell, and they really have no interest in choosing to list their property with
you?
Is there any way to tell how that?
You got to watch that, because sometimes, and this can happen, especially with the more corporate type of companies where the boss out of New York has told them, look, we use this one company on everything and we want you to list with them, but to do your due diligence, we want you to get like 3 listing presentations and packages to put in the file just to show that we did our homework, but these are the guys that I want you to use. Okay, so when you're an agent calling them up saying, hey, can we be one of the agents who, you know, presents on this listing opportunity? Oh, yeah, sure, let's do it. So you want to kind of ideally ask one or more questions to filter down and see if they would realistically consider you or if they've already made their mind up. And you could say something like this, say, great, you know, we'd love to make a listing presentation to you, you know, but at the same time, it's going to take us quite a bit of time to go through the property, put together everything about this presentation, make the presentation to you. So here's all I want to know, okay? If we make this presentation to you and you like what you hear, will you be moving forward and listing the property with us and then just sit and listen or watch and see if they start to squirm or go silent or something? And that's a big indicator that you're just being used. Whereas if they go, oh, yeah, absolutely, if I like what you're going to say, sure, you know, we'll move ahead and list with you, that's a good positive sign, because they don't really want to tell you that you're just being used. We got time for a story?
Yeah, we got time.
Okay,
sure.
So let me tell you a story that actually happened to me around this, okay? Me and the team of agents that I was working with, we were asked to make a listing presentation on this building for sale. It was basically a mini storage facility. So we go down, we make our presentation. While we're waiting, the door opens for us to go in. The first team of the other competitive brokerage company is walking out, okay? We go in, we make our presentation. When we walk out, the next team after is waiting to come in for their presentation, okay? So we're driving back to the office, about a 20 or 30-minute drive, and I go, wait a second. I know the perfect buyer for this building. I can just show it to this person, and we might be able to make a deal. So I get back to the office, and I call the owner. I go, look, I want to show the building. I just remembered I got the perfect buyer, so we may not even be able to list this. Well, Jim, we've already promised the listing to this company. I go, but you haven't signed the listing yet. No, but we've promised it to them. And basically, I realized we'd been set up. They had already promised the listing to them.
Like, yeah.
I showed the building to my guy. We wrote an offer. There was no listing at the time, but we still had to work through that other company. And
They made you work through the other company?
Go through the other company, and I just laughed and went, you know, we've been set up. I got to learn a better way to ask a better question
next
time.
What a great story.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, what a great story. Yeah, that's so – you would think they'd still say, hey –
It's one that you laugh at years later, but it's horrible at the time. But some of your worst experiences in brokerage become your best stories years later.
Oh, boy, I can tell you lots and lots. You're so right. There's like over and over and over. It's like they're real – you know, Tom Antion used to say, you got to tell your stories. You got to tell your story because there's so many and they're true and nobody – you know, it's like, oh, my God, like that's hysterical. That's,
and for anybody listening, Tom Antion is a world-class internet marketing expert who trains people how to do internet businesses and was my internet coach for many years. Wonderful guy.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have mentioned that, too.
Yeah, great guy.
You can go to
Antion.com. I still consult with him sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, me too. He's Antion.com. He's awesome. He's the real deal. I always say that about him.
Antion.com, yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome. I always say he's the real deal. People are like, what do you mean the real deal? No, the real deal. You know how there's so much stuff out there where smoke and mirrors where they try to get you to sign up, but they're not really going to deliver.
He's so sincere and honest, and he even flushes out people who are frauds in internet marketing and speaking and stuff like that.
He does.
He's a great guy. He's been on television basically like exposing people on different networks and stuff like that and talking about how they do this and get away with it. He's kind of like on a mission along with his internet marketing expertise.
He is. He really is. And it's happening too. He's amazing. Amazing person. Wow. So this has gone by. This hour just flew by. Again, this is Natalie Mullenix with Realty Universal Radio, and we have Dr. Jim Gillespie on the line, and his website is commercialrealestatecoach.com. And I think I was going to ask you, real quick, if somebody tries to because we're just about down to the end, but if someone wants to renegotiate the commission, I know we don't have enough time to go into details about it.
Yeah.
When you're bringing them the offer, you already have a signed commission, so you're protected, even though in commercial I hear it gets renegotiated all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to just, you know, do you basically tell them, hey, you know, or what do you do?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, what happens is the best offer you can get is less than the listing price, and they say, well, I'll take it, but I want this much out of your commission. And you just go, well, wait a second. You know, you and I are partners here, okay? I'm already taking less money because the price is lower, and we're each sharing in the same percentage reduction of our price. So, you know, what you're asking me to do is basically to be the person who takes the fall here. And I got to ask you, Mr. Owner, you know, how would you feel if somebody said this to you and said, hey, we can do a deal, but you got to cave in and drop your price? I don't think you'd want a partner like that to, you know, to do that to you. And since you and I are partners, I'm sure you don't feel that's reasonable either.
I love it. That's perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. That's it. So hopefully we can have you back, and I would love to get you on one of the teleseminars with the Realty Universal members at some point, if we could get on for that.
Sure.
I know it's mostly residential, some commercial, but mostly, but we've got the mindsets are great. So tell us, we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Is there anything you'd like to say to anyone out there as a last sharp point? To
just
beware.
Buy low and sell high, you know?
Buy low, sell high. That's definitely good advice. Like right
there
now, there's some really good deals out there, aren't they? Definitely.
You got to dig them up.
We just got to look at like the needle in the haystack. Hey, Jim, it was wonderful having you on, and hope to talk to you soon. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.